Donald Trump, Brexit, Marine Le Pen, and many more across Europe. Populist politics has been surging in the last few years, and the established order is under considerable threat, perhaps more threat than at any time since the Second World War. Has the centre been able to hold its ground? This weekend, a group of international experts of various disciplines are gathering in Dublin to ponder that very question. Ian Baruma is the editor of the New York Review of Books and the professor of democracy, human rights and journalism at Bard College. He's with me. Ian, good morning to you.
Good morning.
This is a discussion, and you are based in New York. As an observer of politics, what has it been like in the States since Donald Trump was elected?
Well, if you live in New York, of course, you live in a bit of a bubble because almost so many people in New York hate Trump that he can't even go home because he doesn't want to face demonstrators and so on. So you don't notice all that much yet, but the news gets crazier by the day, so you notice it. And I was in Washington last week, and there, of course, you do notice it.
The difference between journalism that you would be used to from the UK, where you were born, and what you experience in the US is extreme. And American journalism has to hold its hands up and say, well, the reason politics is like this is because we, as the Fourth Estate, have allowed that to happen.
Yes, I was born and bred in the Netherlands, but your point is exactly the same. Up to a point, it must also be said that in the Trump era, what he despises as the so-called mainstream press has actually been very good. And the Washington Post has gone through an extraordinary revival, and the New York Times has also been consistently critical, CNN. And so to some extent, you're right in that Trump was very, very adept at keeping the media focused on everything that he did, and therefore perhaps had a higher profile before he became president than he should have done. On the other hand, it's difficult because he's very good at making news, even though it may often be spurious and bombastic. But, you know, the news business is in the business of keeping the news ticking over. So it's tough.
Of all that has happened in the last 12 months, because we are coming up to the first anniversary of Brexit, of all that has happened, Brexit, Trump, what's happened in the most recent British general election, what happened in the French elections, the Dutch elections, what surprised you the most?
I don't know about surprised, certainly shocked. For me, Brexit was the biggest shock because I grew up being half British, half Dutch. My mother was British. So for me, it was like a knife being dragged across my soul. I was deeply shocked by it. And, of course, Donald Trump, those two things. Surprising? I don't know. I mean, I was apprehensive in both cases, more so than many of my American friends. And I would say, well, there are a lot of angry people out there. What about Trump? Oh, he'll never win, said my nice liberal friends. You know, America is America.
Well, you did live in New York, perhaps, so that might have been somewhat skewed.
True.
Then when you look at what has happened since, I mean, those more recent events, the French election, the Dutch result in the end, the British general election, where Theresa May, who had been coasting towards a considerable victory, ended up with less than a working majority. Is there a pushback against the populism that led to Brexit and Trump?
It looks that way, and one shouldn't, of course, count one's blessings too soon. It may be part of the Trump effect that at one point people were afraid that Trump's election would boost the morale of similar movements in Europe and would push everywhere to the right. It might have had the opposite effect, that many Europeans took a look at what was going on in America and thought, that's not what we want, so pushed the tide back a bit.
What changed that led to the rise of these populists, the UKIPs, the Donald Trumps, the Geert Wilders, the Marine Le Pens? It's easy to say, oh, it's all social media giving people a voice, but is it as simple as that?
No, I don't think so. In my view, it began to change really in the early 1990s, perhaps even earlier with the Reagan-Thatcher dismantling of the welfare state, but certainly after the fall of the Soviet Union, it was no longer necessary for the West to have a kind of egalitarian countermodel to communism. We needed to have something that was attractive so that people wouldn't go further to the left in the 50s. That was no longer necessary. The United States was the only superpower. The Soviet communism had lost. Margaret Thatcher said there was no such thing as society. And so you got this new mood of extreme individualism, neoliberalism, and so on. And I think a lot of people in this newly globalized world economy began to feel left behind. And it's those left behinds that are the backbone of a lot of populist movements.
Political leaders, governments, progressives in society would always say that when the centre rises and rights are respected, laws are changed for the betterment of minority groups, that this is and further evidence of society moving on, that we are making a better life for everyone in society. What was different in the last 12 months is that those more extreme voices, those that would have countered those rights, that expansion, they found a voice. And where opinions that might have been dormant in some people, they were allowed to come out. They were allowed to be expressed. And that which people would have suppressed because they felt it was wrong, they felt they could vocalise that. And was that something that made a difference in all of this, that those dormant feelings that people might not necessarily shout from the rooftops or tell their friends about, all of a sudden they felt validated by seeing others talking about the same
thing? Yes, I mean, there were always sort of 10-15% in most societies of such voices. So they were always there. I think there are more perhaps disaffected people now than there were because of immigration, globalization, and so on. And there was a kind of liberal consensus, as you say, that it was sort of racist and so on to talk about those things. And I think a lot of, or to voice discontent with that. And I think that has changed, partly because, as I said, the end of the Soviet Union, partly because we're now three generations away from World War II. People don't feel anymore that they shouldn't espouse certain politics because it's dangerous.
That connection, that immediate connection, no more than the idea that Ireland was once an agrarian society and you were never more than one generation away from the land. We're now three or four generations away from the land. That it's the same kind of disconnect.
You know? I think so, because if you take a look at the EU, European unification, the whole idea, it came from two world wars and the notion that we should never have another world war starting in Europe, that France and Germany should pool their resources and so on. And at least two or three generations were convinced of that, rightly in my view. Now the war is so remote. I mean, if you're now in your 20s, World War II is like the Boer War for me. So the emotional resonance is no longer there.
An argument was put forward in recent months that human beings cannot cope with too much information. When you overload the system, it prevents people, intelligent people for the most part, being able to differentiate between what's reality and what is either propaganda or fake. Do you subscribe to that?
I don't know, but if the problem is too much information, I think it's more that in the past, most information that people got, either through television or radio or the newspapers, was filtered through editors, fact checkers, and so on. There was a kind of consensus of what was true or not. And in the internet age, everybody's on their own little websites, and it's a free-for-all. And it's become very difficult for many people to distinguish rubbish from at least something that tries to get closer to the truth.
Is that the biggest threat to the centre, do you think?
Well, I think it's one of the threats to the centre, certainly.
When we talk about Europe, and you mentioned the fact that there's this gulf of difference between the generation, the younger generations, and what happened in World War II, they might take it in during a school trip to a concentration camp or read about it in the history books, but it bears no practical resemblance to what they have in their lives. Is there an existential threat to the European Union post-Brexit? Or has that at least been abated somewhat by recent results in France?
I think it's been abated somewhat, but these things can ebb and flow. It's not hugely popular with many Europeans. On the other hand, I think most Europeans, and that feeling has probably been strengthened by the mess that Brexit has got the UK in, that people are still better off in the EU than out of it. So I don't think it's broken, but I do think they need to think very carefully about reforming it in a way that will bring it closer to most citizens.
And just to finish up, Jeremy Corbyn was written off as being a no-hoper. He was never going to succeed. He ended up getting more seats in Parliament than Neil Kinnock did, or indeed Gordon Brown did, or indeed Michael Foot did. Is that an indication that the centre might not be the only future for Western politics, that there may be politics to the left as well, as may have existed indeed after the Second World War, when we saw things like the NHS being set up and a radical reform of the political system?
It's certainly a possibility. And I think that one reason for his success is that young people came out to vote in far larger numbers than they did in the Brexit vote, the referendum. I think it's also perhaps more due to the fact that Theresa May conducted an appallingly bad campaign than that Corbyn is a particularly skillful campaigner, although he's certainly better than Theresa May. But in some ways, it's the revenge of the young. I mean, they saw Europe being taken away from them because they were foolish enough not to vote in large numbers. And I think now they're making themselves felt.
That is how politics goes. The young always get their say eventually. Ian Buruma, editor of the New York Review of Books and professor of democracy, human rights and journalism at Bard College. Thank you very much for joining us. You'll be speaking as part of the Collins Institute and the Martins Conference, Populism, the Response from the Centre, taking place in Trinity College today and tomorrow. And I note that you brought a hat that will most happily carry you through the Bloomsday celebrations as you walk through the centre of Dublin. Ian, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you. It was a pleasure.